That's what we call a schedule in the industry. It's really, really basic. So this was my schedule today. I went to school, did a puzzle, and I did some writing, and then I did some maths, and then I chose a book, and then I had computer time. Usually the last one's the most motivating one. Okay? So I guess on a Saturday morning, it would be get out of bed, coffee. Because you need the motivator to get out of bed, right? Feed the kids breakfast. Have another coffee. Something like that. And then I get to go to the garage and play with stuff in the garage, you know. So that might help you with these little scenarios. We can talk about that a little bit more in a question time. This is a good one, just... Yeah, I threw it in because I think it kind of puts problems in perspective for these kids and helping us to kind of relate to how they might feel. You know, they might be able to... They may be familiar with this kind of stuff. I think this is Garcia Winner stuff. She's pretty good, if you want to look her up. Just red, obviously, is the fiery, the angry kind of, I'm going to blow my top and throw a chair through the window. And green is, I'm pretty calm, but, you know, whatever. Middle, you could probably kind of get some warning bells and see that there may be some difficulties coming up. And, you know, you can work yourself around that. Or you can even show your kid or show the, you know, the adult or whoever it is that you're dealing with, you know, hey, you know, what's going on here? You know, and they might be able to actually tell you, oh, you know, there's this and this happened. Oh, where are you? Oh, well, I'm a little bit yellow and a little bit green, you know. That stuff like that is all around the internet. Especially by, I think it's, is it Michelle Garcia Winner? Yeah. Michelle? She's good.
Yep. Is there any issues of kids coming up and saying it's a red problem and you think about it and go, well, actually, it's only a green problem?
Well, I guess that's where, like, you knowing the kid comes in, and I think maybe in our context we're talking about the communication. Like, the fact that he's lost his Thomas thing and he can't find it, in our scheme of things, grow up, whatever, you know. But to him, that's the thing he has with him 24/7. That's
big. That's his thing.
That's big.
Yeah. Yeah.
And let me tell you, you should be getting read about that too, because you know what's coming. So find it quick, you know. All right. There's another schedule. This is a good one. I think that's Boardmaker. It's been a while. Okay. So Boardmaker is a program that has billions of little pictures that look like that. Probably some of you guys have seen that. And us autistic teachers love using Velcro. I think we get into it just so we can use Velcro. So there's my schedule. Let's see what I'm going to do today. Today, I'm going to start with a bit of work. And then, you know, parents said I need to drink more water, so we're going to have a drink of water, okay? Then we're going to have morning tea, and that's usually set because, you know, school times and stuff like that. We'll go out to the playground. It's a normal thing we do. Going to come back, going to do some music, and then, because Alex is the best teacher, we're going to go bowling. Then we're going to come back for lunch, and what else is pretty cool here? I haven't touched this thing for 10 years, I reckon. And then we've got swimming after we have a little rest. Then we get to go home. And that's really cool because, you know, if you get organized and you know your youth group and the activities that you're doing and you need this kind of thing. I'm not saying that all autistic kids need this. Okay. But some rely heavily on the visual aids. Okay.
Can you use that as a motivating? Like if you want to put the thing that they dislike in a place just before the thing that they
Sure. My question would be, why are you giving them something that they don't really want to do on a fun youth group night? Like, you know, as a school teacher, yes, absolutely. But on the hour and a half youth group night, yeah. Actually, that was one of the questions that my guys asked me. It's like, what battles do you pick? What behaviours do you take and what do you leave, you know? I might talk about that. I haven't figured it out yet. It's been 15 years. But, you know, that might be something to think about. It's called Boardmaker. And it's really expensive. So basically you have to get Kirsty to steal it for you. Okay? I think the disc's worth...
It's probably worth the Presbyterian Church buying a few copies of it and having it accessible for different churches to have they could look at it like that.
Back in my day, you could only... I don't know how they did it, but it was on a CD. It was a DVD, like a computer. Yeah? And you can't actually load the program onto the computer. You have to have the disc. And there was like two discs in the whole school, and you had 40 classrooms or something. And it was just nuts. And I think the discs were like $800 or $900 each or something. And so everyone would be fighting over Boardmaker. And,
but there's other ways you have to schedule. You don't just have to have the visual picture. Well, lots of kids respond to that.
Yeah.
Some kids, if they can read, respond to words. So you can use a written schedule. So, okay, guys, today when we get to youth group, say you're lucky enough to have a theme being projected, you can have... This is what's happening first, and second we're going to do this, third we're going to do this. If we don't have time, and that's okay, if we do have time, we'll do this. But if we don't, that's okay, we're going to do something else.
Yep,
and
absolutely.
And if there's an interruption to the plan, talking about and using language that says things are going to be different from how we plan things, because that can really be difficult for a child with autism. I'm not creepy with this. How am I going to deal with this? So, okay, using language around that and helping them to understand that when things change, it's okay, it's different, we just have to think about it differently.
But it needs to be explained to the child, because some of them, it'll cause anxiety, a lot of anxiety when it changes, and they'll think, well, I'm not following it when we're actually changing it.
But definitely have it on the schedule, whether visual, picture, or written. You can even draw your own pictures if you need to make it visual. If you don't have access to things like Boardmaker or something.
You don't have to use Boardmaker, for sure. One thing we didn't talk about was autistic people generally, and you could, I don't know if it was in the list that I put in, but generally they find change hard. And often they really heavily rely on routine. So when they come to your youth group at 7:30 on a Wednesday night and you've mixed it up and you're doing something that hasn't been done before first, you may have an issue. That's where your communication comes in. And even on the Sunday before the Wednesday, if you're prepared enough and you've actually planned it as your team, you can, you know, find your kid and you can go, hey, on Wednesday night, it's going to be a little bit different. Let's sit down and we'll read through it and we'll talk about it and stuff. So they're prepared. And often their processing time and the time that they just need generally to kind of think about that could be days, you know. We're pretty adaptable, you know, we kind of take that for granted. But, you know, often these kids really need to stew over it and talk to themselves about it and just remind themselves. And, you know, even a phone call on Tuesday night, hey, you know, if they can speak on the phone, that's great, you know. Hey, you know, you're right for tomorrow night, remember we're going to do this? Yep, cool, you're prepared, you know. Let's quickly do these. Can you quickly read it out?
A new family has turned up at church. You and some other observant people quickly see their 9-year-old boy show some signs of a moderate, severe intellectual disability of some sort. What can you do to help the family get through the service so you can spend some time getting to know them afterwards?
So basically what I'm saying is you don't want them to leave before the end of the service, but let's think about our policy, let's think about our culture of what we're talking about. What have we got in place to... So what do you reckon?
Well, if we've got a policy in place, well and good, but
great.
Nonetheless, we would want to assure the parents that we're all okay with what's happening.
Yep.
We want to let them know if we had an order of service that we could give to them so that their son could see
what
was coming up next. If
yep.
it was Sunday school heading out there, we would want them to know that their son would be safe out there. One of them could go out there as well if that would be some help with them.
Even grab one of the Sunday school leaders. Hey, quick, come over here. Hey, this is Jill and John, whatever. This is Alex. You know, face to a name always helps. Reassurance, perfect, great, easy, done. You guys.
Yeah, read that. An elder
anxious mother after church one Sunday. Her and her 11-year-old son have been attending church services for the last 3 months, and she feels welcome and part of the church. She has summoned the courage to ask about her son attending the weekly youth group, but because of his disability, is nervous. How can the elder help her?
Okay. What do you reckon?
I just said a starting point is to, I guess, get the mum to talk a bit about what the disability is and how it affects.
Perfect.
And,
yep.
And
communication.
What things can she see as being an issue?
Yep.
Coming to.
Yep. Yep. I think I put elder in there just to kind of re-emphasize the point of, you know, I think, you know, my understanding of the Presbytery Church is, you know, usually it comes from the top, you know. You make policies, you know, with the elders and the minister, and that comes down. Border management might help out logistically and stuff, helping, you know, organize all that, getting all together, and then it feeds down into the volunteers and the leaders and stuff. So, you know, and it's also, you know, you don't want to put the elder on the spot. You know, it's going to be hard for the elder if there isn't these kind of things in place and someone does come up, because, you know, let's assume the elder isn't trained in dealing with this kind of stuff and hasn't been to, you know, a seminar like this or has any understanding. But, you know, if the church quickly adopts a policy, then he's aware of that and he can, you know, put it into place, you know, pretty quickly. Yeah, look, most of these answers are the same. It's using your toolkit, you know, it's your communication, basically. Have you got one, Peter? Don't be shy. They're pretty easy.
What kind of practical steps can you make during the week to help your leaders and special needs kids come prepared for youth group, camp, or a special?
Yep.
Out of the ordinary church service being run on Sunday?
Yep. Kind of gave you the answer before. Yeah. Just communicate. Pick up the phone, you know, even go around to their house. Like, if you've got time, like, there's nothing better than, you know, a quick drop in. You need 10 minutes, you know, again, put a face to a name, you know, greet the kid. Hey, Alex, you know, how you going? This is going on Sunday. There's going to be some, you know, the seats are going to be in a different way. And we did church on Sunday, and they completely ripped the auditorium apart and put a boat in the middle and put a circle around. And, you know, I don't know if they did the things that I've... anyway. Wow, no. That's right. That's right. I didn't know where to sit, you know. And then they came to me and they said, hey, you can be Jesus up in the boat. And I'm like, it's the beard, man. You'd get it all the time, right? Yeah, same stuff. Cool. Last one?
They were just thinking this is like a Sunday school.
Yeah?
Well, this is three leaders in the youth group are debriefing after an evening where they felt what was planned with our God. They discussed how the attention of two leaders was always directed towards the kids who couldn't sit still, listen to instructions, and constantly interrupted, putting the rest of the group off. The other leader, teaching the rest of the group, struggled to contain and manage 15 other kids, and also noticed how the ASD boy regularly attends, wandered away, and did his own thing in the next room. What practical steps can be done to help prepare and improve for next week?
We started to discuss communication being the first thing, of course. So the leaders need to get together and they need to debrief about what happened in the meeting. Big thing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that they need to identify is what kids were doing, the behaviours. They need to start talking about scenarios as to why those children might have been having those behaviours.
Yep.
Start coming up with some of those ideas as to why they might be having those behaviours is because the plan wasn't set out, they couldn't see what was expected of them, you know, different kinds of scenarios like that. So you're brainstorming different ideas together as to why those things might be working. But then you've got the issue of, then why does the ASD keep going off? Isn't he one of the kids that are having these behaviours? Well, no, but maybe that loudness and maybe the raucousness of those kids and the fact that everything's happening and you can't see what's going on means they need to withdraw and have some withdrawal. withdrawals.
Yep.
So
perfect.
You sit down and you talk about what's happened first, and then you sit down and talk about, okay, well, how are you then going to implement things to stop those things from happening? And that's always my daily job.
Yes.
Pretty much. So you sit down as a team, you work out together, let's try this next week. We'll make sure that Kid with ASD has someone he can go to or has a buddy within the team or the kids that you think might work well with them. Or if they're friendly already, it's often good to pick someone they know with them already and work in a buddy system. We're going to do this next, or we're going to, and you know, develop that relationship.
Mm. Yep.
One of your jobs as a leader anyway is to help the kids develop relationships,
yep,
with each other. So involving the kids in understanding those kids with things is,
yep,
important to as a leader.
Yep.
So, but yeah, first communicating,
understanding,
using your understanding, planning,
yep,
and then pray.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to go back to the parents and say it was a disaster.
Yeah.
You know, and you'll have a laugh about it because, you know, everything's okay. And, you know, I think most of the time in hindsight it actually ends up being quite funny. It's just and meeting back with the parents is always going to strengthen your relationship with them too, which in turn is going to it's just going to yield fruit.
In doing that too, you can go back to the parents and say, oh, you wandered off, and you know, you might not have thought that the kids were being loud,
yep,
but the parents will be able to ask you, oh, so what actually happened? And then there'll be something for them that's like, oh,
yeah,
well, it was such and,
yep,
such that worked there. And you're like, oh, great, so what would you do if you're in that situation? How do you work with him for that specific man?
Yep.
And then finding if there's some sort of tool or something that he or she can have at youth group to help them get through that, whether it be like a rubber band in the pocket or whether it be, you know, headphones, or,
yep,
or just a headphone with some music going, so, you know, they look just like everyone else, but the music is actually helping them to block out the extra sound that's overwhelming or something like that. So
that's where your planning comes in, absolutely.
Yeah.
Just quickly, that kind of goes along with the other one that I saw. Sorry, I forgot to mention that. So I had the one with this one. So it's just a feeling, what we call a feelings chart or a gauge. And usually this is coloured, well, this is blank. Again, there's your little board maker pictures, and board makers' pictures have a lot of faces that, you know, meant to characterise certain emotions, because they have trouble, you know, some of them have trouble identifying their own emotions and they don't know how to express it. So they can kind of see, oh, yeah, that's, you know, what I look like and that's how I feel. And, you know, but they can also kind of get a larger impression of what's going on here. It's, you know, up here, oh, yeah, you know, I'm about to explode. I'm not there, you know, I'm down here. And that's what that's about anyway. So I kind of... That's a little more... There's a program that goes with this. It's a pretty large program, and there's lots of colour systems and things like that. But generally, they all kind of slot together and work out that way. Let's do some questions. I've got two. I've got a statement and a question. I've forgotten your name, sorry.
Rob,
yeah. Rob's just highlighted something to me that's really, really important, and I'm just going to read it because it's really great. He said, it's important not to define kids or people by their diagnosis. Okay, this is going along with the dignity and, you know, with that. If we see traits, he says, it's important not to make assumptions that that person has autism or that person has ODD, or that person has, you know, for example, autism. We need to seek further information. So that's where the communication comes in. That's where I think, you know, once you kind of talk with the parents and kind of get an understanding of the kid, and then they say, oh, yeah, he has this, or he has a diagnosis of this, that's like a green light to you. Then you can kind of go, okay, cool. I thought that, don't need to say it though. I thought that, now I've kind of got the green light because they've told me he has autism, cool. I can go along further. And yeah, he's just also agreeing. He's an occupational therapist, and communication, definitely the key. Adam's got a good question, and it's a really, really hard question. And I don't think I can answer it terribly well or at all, but we'll read it anyway. How can we pastorally care for parents who are struggling to come to terms with their child being autistic, or probably anything else for that matter, any other disability? Perhaps they are in denial or looking for someone or something to blame. That's a really, really, really good question. How do we pastorally care for them? I mean, love's a big one, I think. And I think also having your policies in place to be able to welcome these kids in and for them to feel comfortable in staying. Let's assume that they're at the church already and staying at that church because they do understand that there's, you know, God's body of people around them all supporting them in this, you know. And while they may be, you know, struggling to come to terms with it, at least they've got this family that they can fall back on and also trust, I think, that their kid can go out to Sunday school or that, you know, if the kid has a meltdown in the middle of the sermon, that they understand and it's okay and they're not going to have fingers pointed at them and, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, and it's also a little bit of what I was saying before, like that 2 hours on a Wednesday night at youth group might be the chance that this couple gets to have some time together, you know, which, you know, I can imagine like being in a house with a full-on special needs kid, the time's limited and having any time to actually sit down and, you know, with my kids, like sometimes we manage to sneak 15 minutes in when I get home and have a coffee and just talk about the day and, you know, our girls are, you know, don't have anything like that to worry about, which is an amazing thing. But pastorally caring for them is I think it's anything that anyone can do. In terms of like helping them out with their, I would think it would be some form of grief that, you know, they may be still trying to work through. I was saying to Adam, I used to understand grief to be a circle thing that you had kind of, you know, quarters or eighths or whatever it was. I can't remember how many. But I was talking with someone else and they said it's more of a linear presentation now. But that doesn't matter. But I would kind of think that, you know, having someone to blame or something to blame is part of that cycle of grief. And not being able to kind of get past that to come to the point where they can be at peace with you know, their child, you know, their kid, and being able to move on and not feel that anger anymore. It's a massive thing, I think. And, you know, obviously, like, you can point them in the direction of people or, you know, connections you may have made to, you know, maybe professionals that they may be to help, and even just as simple as just listening, just sitting down and just listening. How was your day? How was your week? Just tell me, like, you've had a shocker. Just let's talk about it, you know, and just listen, because debriefing is something that's going to relieve a little bit of that stress, and you know, it may be just that thing that gets them through the rest of the week, something like that. There was something else that I was going to say about that.
You did mention before about pointing them to God, where they can get their hope and focus in life from them.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, there's no better place to be able to kind of witness and to get them to see. You know, it's the stuff that we're reading in the Bible, isn't it? It's those verses, like, you know, God's got this, and, yeah, it's really, really hard, and you know, day to day the struggles are immense, but, you know, if we can constantly just point them back to the fact that God's way bigger than their anger, at least, or their denial or their grief, and he's going to give them what they need to be able to get through the day, then, you know, hopefully their faith builds to the point where, you know, managing some of these, I guess, parts of grief would be a bit more bearable, a bit more manageable. Not a great answer. It's but be a church, you know. Love them, embrace them, care for them, give them everything that you can, and you know, that goes with everyone, with all these kids. Just give them all you got. One other thing I was going to say is, and it works with that too, is I know the hardest part about doing all this is actually having the volunteers to do it. It's come and help out in Sunday school, put your name on the list, and you get two. And you know that the two is going to be spent on little Alex over there in the corner, you know. So, you know, that's a really hard situation. But I guess once you start putting all these policies and this culture of, you know, accepting these kids or helping these kids or working with these adults, you know, in your congregation, then I think you're going to find more and more people willing to help, you know, because they see something that's set in concrete and something that the church is actually focusing on and working towards. Yep.
Have you seen a church actually do this? Or heard of churches putting these policies and actually, as a church community,
yep,
supporting families and children that have autism spectrum disorder?
No. But I haven't been to many churches.
And for those you know, is there something in the wider Christian community you've heard of churches that have?
I think, like Brian said at the start, I think it's coming. Churches are notoriously behind the eight ball, I think. And that's, you know, partly to do with the fact that it's all volunteer-based. And, you know, you can have the best ideas in the world, but unless you've got people putting your hand up to actually to do them and run them. You've seen one?
Yeah, I've seen them. But, again, they're big churches with lots of resources and
yep,
lots of people going, and people who have experience and backgrounds in working with people with different disabilities and so forth, OTs and,
yep,
and teachers' aides like myself, or teachers, or psychologists, or, you know, specialists who tend to work in the field, see the need, set it up, and then volunteers come and they eventually learn. But it is a long time coming, and but it's a wonderful ministry to be able to be part of, and often those people are the ones dealing pastorally with parents and people going through that pain and that suffering, but they're also able to hand them on to other specialists who do know, because they've often worked in the field, or, you know, it can happen, it does happen, but the resources are there in the ones,
yep,
where it does happen, unfortunately. But it doesn't mean that we shouldn't be thinking outside the box, even if we're small. It depends on everyone developing that same attitude within the church.
It can start with one person, you know. It can just start with, you know, with me standing up the front and going, hey, my name's Alex, I'm working with the kids. I'm a teacher and, you know, I teach special needs as well, so just so you all know, that kind of thing. Just start small, you know. At least someone in the church is like, oh, okay, cool.
You don't think you've actually got autistic people around you? You definitely will have autistic, or someone with another disability. My daughter's got ADD, so, you know, there are a lot of hidden disabilities, a lot of which were listed on that thing, and they all affect kids in different ways, and it's great to understand each kid. And it goes back to the point Rob made before. Each different trait is a trait on its own that make that child unique and different and wonderful and special, and they're the things that you want to learn about the person, just as much as you want to know that your best friend's colour is blue, or, you know, that's just as important.
Sorry, Kirsten.
No,
we need to finish. T- tonight we've talked about autism, but and I'm not sure that I want to talk about autism as a disability. I'm struck by the article you linked, Kirsty, on Facebook about, and one of you said it, don't identify a child by their diagnosis or something like that. Autistic people are autistic people, but they're people. So we're talking about that tonight, but we've got a whole, there's a whole range of disabilities in our community, and the question of how our churches relate to them is a whole other area. Particularly for youth ministry, we've got a teenager in our church with spina bifida. How do you do youth ministry? How do you invite him to a PYV camp where you know that he can't do most of the activities? Some of the rooms we use and the campsites we use, he can't use. So you start to think about that, and that certainly impacts your thinking there. Alex, we want to thank you for coming and giving up your night tonight. So a book for you to thank you,
oh, beautiful,
for that. And my lovely assistant here.
Flowers. That's great.
These aren't for you. These are for your wife, Jess, because
thank you.
I know it's a cost for her for you to come out tonight.
Sure.
As well.
No, I really appreciate that.
We appreciate you sharing your wisdom and your knowledge with us. And we look forward to having some tools to put into place.
I hope I gave you something to think about. I feel like Moses. I'm the guy that... I'm no good up the front. Yeah.
That was good.
Thanks.
PYV are interested in training and providing events like this. So on July 18, we are having the man, the myth, the legend, Tim Hawkins, who's back from South Africa for a little while. And while he's in Melbourne, he's agreed and got some time to come and do a training night for us. So I know the date, I know the time, a venue yet to be sorted out, but that will happen and that will be great. And then in September, Science and Faith and Adam Humphreys. Adam, do you want to give us a really brief...
Very brief. I grew up as a science fiction nerd, so I decided to explore the universe and understand God's creation by doing science, but I didn't actually believe in God at the time. And during my university degree, I became a Christian. So I was trying to wrestle, how do I reconcile my science and my faith together? And I still haven't done that 100%. I'm still working through that. But what I did find is that on both sides of the argument, there's a lot of misunderstanding, a lot of polarisation. There's actually a lot that we can talk through and reconcile, and you can actually be a scientist and a Christian and do that well. And I think that's something that our youth need to hear.
Absolutely.
And quite frequently you kind of hear people say, I don't believe in God because science says. And to teach them that's just not true.
Yeah, so that's a really important aspect for youth ministry, and Adam will be doing that in September. My thanks to Peter and the crew here at Wyndham for allowing us to come and use your building. Terrific to be able to come, for me, to come to the other side of town. The better side of town. The wetter side. No, the better side of town. So it's good to be here. Let me pray to close to them. Father God, I thank you that we can open the scriptures and we can read there that we are created in your image and that you know us in our creation. Our height, our weight, our skills, our abilities, and those things that make us unique from everyone else on the planet. And I thank you, although I don't fully understand why, that you have created, or that we live in such a time that this thing we call autism is becoming known. And I thank you that these young people, these older people who fit in this spectrum are created in your image, are created to bring glory to you. Lord, I pray that we can help them to understand that. I pray that we can help parents to find hope in that. I pray that we can help these young people to know that they can serve Jesus Christ fully in all their intricacies
and all their interests, that they can serve Jesus. I thank you for Alex and for his witness to you. I thank you for the work that he is doing. And so, Lord, we pray that you will continue to bless him and strengthen him in that what must be very tiring work. I pray for Jess and for their girls too, that they will each know the love and joy and delight of a close family and of peace. Lord, as we travel home now, I pray that we will be encouraged by what we've learnt and heard tonight. I pray that we will have things in our minds about what we can do in our churches to help prepare for those young people to come into our church family, into our youth ministries, where we can show them the love and the patience of Jesus. Lord, teach us so that we can minister to others. I pray to the glory of your great and holy name. Amen.
Thanks.